Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes?
Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It was a different team.
I have no problem with either winning it. Yep. Look at the time he's got. And when he has that time and can't find anybody, this is what he does. Flag is thrown to the 44-yard line.
I like courtesy Amazon. Lamar Jackson Saturday night had 15 carries for 81 yards in the Ravens' 28-14 victory over Pittsburgh. He hadn't had a double-digit carry game since October 13th when he had 11 carries against Washington. It's the most carries he had this season since week one, where he carried it 16 times versus Kansas City. So could we see similar this Sunday?
I'd be surprised. So much of this is matchup dictated, and so much of this is, especially a team like Pittsburgh facing them a third time, is, okay, what are we going to do now that's a little different, that's a curveball? We've put a bunch of stuff on film. They had trouble stopping. We know they're going to course correct. How can we zig when they zag? And I think Pittsburgh was going to load up and try to stop Derrick Henry, and they were going to keep some heavy people on the field. And so Lamar, especially this more explosive, thinned-down Lamar, this version of Lamar, I thought, would be able to bounce outside and create some big positive plays there in a way that he didn't in the second meeting against Lamar, against Pittsburgh, the last one in Baltimore. And so that proved to be the case. And there was obviously a heavy workload in general in the run game. And maybe a little less Justice Hill than I thought there might be, especially in what became kind of a blowout. And it was Justice Hill's first game back in a while, and he was getting that sort of, right, getting his legs back under him a little bit. I look at the Bills. And the Bills want to live in nickel and dime. They want to keep their small, twitchy, fast people on the field. They think someone like a Milano could spy a Lamar Jackson. They're kind of built for that stuff. And I don't know that the Ravens are going to have to get, I won't say as creative, because they'll still be creative with their deployment of personnel. But I don't know that this is going to be about even the mesh point as much as it's going to be about design sort of inside zone runs for Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry design runs out of shotgun. Derrick Henry under center. Derrick Henry with Kohler and Pat Ricard on the field and a sixth offensive lineman. And that's not to say there won't be a role for Lamar, but there was a certain intent. There was a shock to the Steelers system that was clearly built into that 15-play early script. That was clearly something Lamar leaned into. And let's face it. I mean, he got dinged pretty good, and that lower back was a problem for a while. I think this is one where Derrick Henry, you know, hey, 26 times last week. It might be 30 today, Hoss. Like, it just might be. And if we strip kneel downs out of it, if we're talking about actual ball-carrying opportunities, my suspicion is more than half will be him on his own when things break down in a scramble drill versus the number of designed, intentful, we're going to show you what Lamar can do early in this game. I think they lean the other way, and I think they try to beat him up physically in a bunch of different ways with Justice Hill and with, obviously, Derrick Henry and with Kohler and the fullback on the field pretty much all the time. And then the sixth offensive lineman sprinkled in too. Like, I will say this. I bet they run more plays in this game with no wide receivers on the field than they do design runs for Lamar Jackson. Not to say he won't come out with 8 or 10 carries, because sometimes he's just going to see what he sees.
And looking back to the first game, there were 5 design quarterback runs in which Lamar had 48 yards on the ground, 18 rushing yards over expected. Now, the Bills have done well defending quarterback runs.
Yes.
Of course, it's a different animal when we're talking about Lamar Jackson, but they allow the 10th fewest rushing yards per game to quarterbacks. And I think the thing that I'm most interested in seeing is how differently this rushing attack is going to look this time around as opposed to September. And we talked about it earlier in the show, just how different it was. They only ran that one play with an extra offensive lineman in that first game, and Derrick Henry did pretty much all of his damage outside the tackles, didn't have really much success at all in between the tackles with 11 carries, 26 yards. But remember, that was Rosengarten's first start at right tackle. That was McCary's first start at left guard this year. So a lot has changed, and a lot has changed schematically for this ground game. That being said, Jason, could we still see them run those outside runs given the effectiveness that they had in that first game?
Yeah, they could. I mean, I think they're going to be able to have some joy against this defense a couple of different ways. Now, the Nozay Flowers thing hurts because he was a guy who really was feasting out of some heavy personnel early in the year.
And they run him in motion. It would make, make guys move.
So that, you know, that element, the smallest guy with all your biggest guys. But I think, again, the leaning into the sixth offensive lineman, whether they, you know, they thought Zay might get hurt down the stretch. I mean, it started in that Texans game before it happened. But whether they just wanted to have something else in their toolkit to get going down the stretch, if they thought it wasn't going to be a day where they necessarily loved what the wide receiver matchups or what have you, the fact that they can win without a wide receiver on the field. And I'm telling you, I think there will be a couple of sequences where Justice Hill does some big stuff in the pass game, because it's been so set up that they're running out of this. Every time Jones is on the field, it's a run. Well, and even it doesn't have to be with Justice Hill. It could be Derrick Henry as well, where they flare something out to Derrick Henry and he takes off 40 yards. I think they're setting it up. I think that's going to be the next stage out of it, because when I drilled down on the 6-0 line stuff, it's pretty much, it's been almost like 99% of run play. Well, they know that tendency too, and there's going to be something built in there for Lamar to throw it. Because again, he doesn't have that many options. I mean, Andrews is out there sometimes. Likely's out there sometimes. Kohler. It's not to say he couldn't be to a tight end, but I think putting in another wrinkle for the running back and throwing out of the six offensive line stuff, I would not surprise me if that's another level of this, another layer to that onion that gets peeled back, you know, Sunday night in Orchard Park. Look, it's a one-game season. Anything's possible. I don't think Lamar's running the – I don't think he's running the ball 16, 17, 18 times in this game. I don't.
I'm curious. They have so much success running out of spread, but the Bills are so light in the rear, you want to be heavy.
But, I mean, if you look at what they're doing, though, I mean, especially with the sixth offensive lineman, like, I mean, I wouldn't get caught up in where he's handing the ball off. Like, I'd get caught up in, like, are they running duo? Are they double-teaming people up front? Are they whamming people up front? Like, when Derrick Henry does the one-cut inside zone, what does that hole look like? And when he gets through that hole, what's the size of the linebacker he's about to meet? Like, some of that stuff, I don't know what the Bills do. And, obviously, if you sell out to stop that, you've got an MVP quarterback still there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got tight ends who can beat linebackers and beat safeties and make things happen. So how far is McDermott willing to go to take that away? And if he does that, then yeah, Lamar just keeps it and he runs away from all your 280-pounders. So, I mean, they're going to need to have some special stuff from Russo and AJ Epenesa, I can never say his name. Like those two, not just, I'm not even talking pass rush, but just contain. Like what they're able to do to prevent Derrick Henry from getting his feet started or to muddle and the mush rush to hem Lamar inside the tackle box. Like that's a big ask. And again, with the specter of now three tackles on the field, plus a 300-pound fullback, plus a 260-something pound blocking tight end, plus a 250-pound running back. I don't know. I don't know. And I again, I'd say with all that and the way the Bills are constructed, that if Lamar's running a lot, it's because this game is not going how they thought it might, and it just becomes an all-out, you're in survival mode.
We will be keeping you, we'll keep getting you ready for this football game all week long. And coming up next, we'll hear from the other side, Coach Sean McDermott, Josh Allen. They spoke after the game this weekend. We'll hear from them next here on The Fan.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Ref came over to talk to you, went like all the way to the bench. What was he saying? What was going on?
Oh, was that after? I wasn't happy with what was going on, and I was yelling a little bit, and he just said, "Don't be yelling." So, my bad. Sorry.
Did he apologize for the? Did he apologize?
I won't say anything about that.
Josh Allen getting into it with an official during the game.
Was he?
Don't be yelling.
Is that what happened there? Are you buying that?
No, I'm not.
Were you watching that game?
Don't be yelling.
I think he went over there to say, hey, they beat the hell out of that tight end in the back of the end zone, and we missed it.
Yeah.
But we'll be better next time, Josh. We'll play up to your standards.
Uh-huh.
We'll call the game the way you play football.
Yeah.
Huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I don't believe for one minute, and I'm pretty good with body language, I don't believe for one minute the way he walked over to him all the way on the bench, put his arm on his shoulder, and looked apologetic. Like, I'm 50 years old. I'm a grown-ass man. I know what I'm looking at. Don't tell me he went over there to excoriate you.
Oh.
Baloney. Baloney.
It's not the same crew calling this game, correct? Well, we don't know yet.
No, no. You've covered this league for a long time.
Have you ever seen
that mid-game?
Never.
Mid-game, the head
Never.
Ref goes over?
You've got other people who are closer to that situation. If you were mad at him, you do it in a way. If you're so pissed off about something he said, A, you're flagging it in all likelihood because it's a visceral reaction in real time, and B, if it doesn't rise to that level, then you're probably having some underling or somebody. You're not going out of your way to do it where all the cameras are going to catch it, where it becomes a thing. Like, you're going all the way over there because you really feel like, I owe this young man an apology.
Can I just say real quick before we get to Sean McDermott, because we didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday, and I don't know how much time we'll get to it at League at Large, but watching that game, I found the Denver Broncos to be utter and absolute frauds. And maybe they're seven seeds, and only one seven seed has ever won since they expanded it, and this is their first bite, and they're going to be better next year. But this was a team that's defense flew all over the place all year long, and they sucked.
Well, they were on the football field quite a bit, were they not?
Yeah,
Denver can't run the ball.
No, they cannot.
Denver hit one big play, and then it was a whole lot
first
of three
drive.
And outs.
Yeah.
And they
fake
did have
punt.
A drive at the end. They stole a little bit of time there, but... You know, I think they hit the wall. Buffalo has a legit offensive line.
They
and Denver lives and dies with a pass rush, and it's a pass rush. You know, they're not – Vance Joseph isn't back there bringing seven or eight. It's not Brian Flores.
No.
And I just think they couldn't get through, and they were running out of gas, and they had an injury or two. And I was disappointed that Sean Payton didn't, frankly, keep attacking that defense.
Yeah.
Now, the scope of that offense shrunk. Now, we come to find out Bo Nix was banged up, too. Not necessarily
back
from specifically in that game, but something he had been playing with. Maybe that was exacerbated through the course of the game. But I was shocked that Sean Payton coached that game small. I thought he would go all out to let that kid throw as many passes as he could in that environment, especially when they started falling behind, and let the chips fall where they may.
Let's get to Sean McDermott, who has spoken, I guess he had his press conference yesterday as well, just like Harbs did, and he talks about the growth of his linebacker group since that Week 4 loss in Baltimore.
Yeah, time on task is everything, and that's part of what they've missed with Matt being out. Matt missed his own time, and then the relationship, you know, they have a strong relationship, but the relationship that occurs on the field, that happens on the field, that then leads to execution, right? So I saw some improvements in that this past weekend, and it's important that continues to grow along with the connectivity with Taron.
So, Matt, Taron Johnson is referring to Matt Milano's back. Matt Milano was not in that first game.
He's a hell of a football player.
He's a great football player.
Great instincts, his nose for the ball. He makes them better. He is part of their central nervous system, part of their spine. I get and acknowledge all of that. I tend not to think that if the Ravens go with a six offensive lineman, 15 or 20 plays, and if the fullback's on the field for 35 odd, maybe more offensive snaps, that Matt Milano is going to be the thing that is unlocks this Bills defense and lets them hold up physically. I don't buy that. I could be wrong.
They ran for 271 yards in the first matchup on 34 carries. 8 yards per carry. Are they going to rack up that many yards again?
They might.
But is Matt Milano going to come in and the Ravens are going to be held in check and they're going to rush for less than 120
yards? He's 220
yards?
Pounds, yeah, okay? This guy's listed at 220, which means he's probably 212, especially this time of year. Like,
I don't see that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not buying it. More from Sean McDermott. He talks about how the Bills defense matches up with the Ravens offense.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, this is a unique offense in terms of their production and how explosive they are. It's a great combination, unlike any I've seen with Lamar and Derrick Henry. And then you add the passing game and the scrambles and all that type of stuff. I think Coach Monken does a phenomenal job of putting those guys in position as well. So it's take it one play at a time and we'll see where it goes.
Giving the flowers to everyone, no pun intended, but no Zay flowers, but Todd Monken and Derrick Henry, et cetera. He knows he's got a huge task on Sunday.
So I just went to the Bills roster, and I'm sorting it by weight.
Uh-huh.
Okay? From heaviest to lightest.
You can do that?
Oh, yeah.
Who's the heaviest?
Well, Osiris Torrance is listed at 347, right? So, then Deion Dawkins, then Connor McGovern, Spencer Brown. It's the starting offensive line, right? And then the center, and then the backup guards. Like, I'm scrolling down trying to find a defensive player here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Wait, this must just be offense.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm like, wait a minute. This is impossible. Get back to me after the next clip. Oh, here we go. Here's just by defense. Okay. Even on defense, I mean, they've got 300-pounders. That's it.
Ed Oliver listed at 300 pounds?
No. He's listed at 287.
Wow. Is their heaviest?
Their heaviest is Jordan Phillips.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Yeah, 341.
Okay.
Daquan Jones, 320. Austin Johnson, 314. I don't know, man. I mean, they're D tackles, okay? Their D tackles are 290 and 287.
Yeah, Ed Oliver's light.
I mean, that
he's a nice player, but
I haven't seen those types of groups hold up all year, you know? Epinesa's big for a hybrid guy, yeah, but he's 260. He's Charlie Kohler size.
Yes.
Russo, they list at 266.
The Ravens have a fullback that's 300.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I
it's a weight. It's a weight mismatch.
It's a power, weight, velocity, G-forces, the whole nine yards.
Girth.
It always comes back to girth with the bone.
Yes, it does.
I mean, they list Von Miller at 250. I don't think he's 250.
He's also old.
I don't think he wants a whole lot to do with Derrick Henry at this stage of his career.
I don't think anyone wants a whole lot to do with Derrick Henry.
I mean, Bernard's a really nice player. He's 224 pounds.
He is a nice player.
They built the team to stop Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball 50 times a game. Right? They built the team. They went to Arrowhead and scored whatever they scored, 40, and it wasn't enough. And it's like, all right, well, what do we have to do to beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead? All right. And then they've done a great job of putting together a really athletic, really smart, tuned up defense. But the Ravens built a rugby team. And I don't think this group can play rugby.
When we come back, we'll get Rita Hubbard's thoughts on the Ravens, what she thought about Saturday night, and what she expects to see next Sunday. Our weekly chat with Rita next here on The Fan. Ravens beat the Steelers Saturday 28-14. They're getting ready to take on the Buffalo Bills on Sunday at 6:30. Ravens will be back on the practice field tomorrow. It's a perfect time to head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline for our weekly chat with our friend Rita Hubbard. And Rita, thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate your time. So I think we all thought the Ravens would win on Saturday, but were you surprised at the beatdown that they handed to their rival Steelers?
Yes and no. Yes, because it is still a division rivalry. No, because the Steelers had not played good football in over a month. So, you know, it's tricky. Those types of games are very tricky. You never know when a guy knows who you are, how they're going to play it. And unfortunately for the Steelers, the Ravens just had too much power. They have too much firepower on offense. And then that defense has turned around. And their offense, to me, is pretty inept.
Yeah.
No matter who you put in at the quarterback position. So, yes, I'm, you know, surprised because usually those types of games don't go like that. Even though I know that they won by two scores, you know, early, like a couple weeks prior. But then also with the way that they have been playing down the stretch, you know, it felt like that they just wanted to go get their flight for Cancun ready at that point.
Rita, looking ahead to Sunday, Ravens Bills, they met in September. Ravens beat them down 35-10, ran them over defensively. They dominated them. That being said, a lot has changed for both of these teams. How much do you take away from that first matchup?
You know, look, at the end of the day, you know, they'll sit there because Bills fans will tell you that they didn't have guys on defense, which is fine, right? But the offense of the Bills, and no, they didn't have Amari Cooper at that point, but they still only put up 10 points against a team that at the time was ranked 32nd in pass defense. And so, yes, they've gotten better. They've gotten Milano back, who wasn't there. They got Amari Cooper. So they do have, you know, more firepower this time around. But then also the Ravens know how to use Derrick Henry now. And they did in that matchup, by the way. I want to be clear on that I felt like that they used Henry fantastic in that matchup. But now they know how to utilize him. Now they got – you know, their tight ends moving and going. And now this defense that wasn't playing well, quite frankly, at the time that that game had come about, has now been stout. So this is going to be a fun matchup. I'm curious to see how this is going to go. There's people that believe that, you know, the Ravens probably are going to run some zone, which in my opinion, that offense, that's not going to bode well. So I really think that, you know, the offense of the Ravens is going to have to really step up and continue what they've been doing, which is pounding the ground on the run and, you know, allowing Lamar to make the plays that he can make in the air as well.
It doesn't sound like Zay Flowers. Lamar, his back seemed to be an issue for at least part of the game. Any thoughts on the magnitude of those two situations?
I mean, I think Lamar will be okay. You know, get that man some ibuprofen or something. Mm-hmm. Put him in an ibuprofen IV. He'll be all right. Zay obviously is a bigger concern, but I still feel confident that the guys that they have can still get it done. Rashad Bateman, man, like I feel like we don't give him enough flowers. Yeah. He just consistently finds ways to get open. Isaiah Likely consistently finds ways to make plays. And then you got Mark Andrews, who, by the way, Mark Andrews wasn't playing at the level that he's playing now back in week 4 because he was still trying to get himself back in form after that car accident. So there's other guys that you can, you know, rely and step up for. You had Nelson Aguilar, you know, catch a pass. And again, a crucial pass in the Steelers game. So as much as you want Zay to be a part of what it is that they're doing, I feel confident in the other guys because they've all been playmakers at some point this season. Oh, and don't let me forget my man, Justice Hill, because y'all know I'm Team Hill over here too.
Yeah.
So that guy.
We're talking with Reed Hubbard, Inside Access here on the Van. We can talk about all these guys. I just have trouble, like, seeing a scenario where the Bills can stop the Ravens running Derrick Henry. Like Matt Milano's playing. We've talked about this a lot the last couple of days. He's playing. He's not a run stuffing linebacker. They are light in the rear, that football team. They didn't match up well with the Ravens when they played the first time, and now the Ravens have figured out what they're doing more than they did when they played them the first time.
Yeah, and that's my thing too, Ken, is that look, and now they're running zone read the way that they should have been doing probably earlier in the season. They're doing it now, and now we're seeing, you know, shout out to Lamar's mom because he's been doing what he's supposed to do ever since he got cussed out by his mama. But sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need somebody to put some things into perspective for you. Do you want to be great? Sometimes being great means doing the things that you don't want to do, but the things that you have to do. And doing the zone read makes it so hard for everybody. The Steelers, if I'm not mistaken, is a top 10 run defense. And they put essentially 300 yards. Yeah, it was 299 because they had a kneel down, but 300 yards on the ground against a team that defends the run extremely well. So I do think that this is a matchup problem for, you know, the Bills. And on top of that, Derrick Henry has always had success against the Bills. So it's going to be interesting because if you try to stop Henry, well, you're going to be able to stop Lamar. He's just as much as the weapon on the ground as Derrick Henry is. And then if you try to stop both of those things and you try to put 9 people on the box, oh, okay, well, there's some man matchup out there. Somebody's going to get killed in the air. So this is going to be fun, but I agree. Like, I don't know how you stop what the Ravens are doing right now with the run game.
Rita, Ravens defense was dominant in the first half. That third quarter, it looked like that Cincinnati Thursday night game, though, with all those big plays. Does that concern you at all heading into the Bills game, or much ado about nothing?
Sure. No, you got to be concerned because even though the Bills, you don't know too many people's names over there, they still have a high-powered offense. I mean, they're out there. He's throwing to different receivers and pass catchers in every game. The guy that caught the ball on Sunday's game at the back of the end zone, I never even heard of that dude before. It's the first time I ever heard of this guy. So the fact that he's spreading the ball around, you can't really just zone on one guy. And that's the difficulty of Buffalo's offense, right, is that there's not one, outside of James Cook, mm-hmm. right, and, of course, Josh Allen. The guys that they're throwing to, it's not just Shakir. It's not just their tight ends. There's other guys. Oh, Curtis Samuel. There's other guys that are participating in what it is that they're doing. So, yes, I'm concerned, but I'm optimistic because this defense has really showed up and stepped up over the last 6 and 7 weeks in the season. Is it going to be a challenge? Absolutely. But I do think that they are up for the challenge, and I do think that they can bode themselves well. We'll see how well, but again, I don't know what the Bills can do on the other side to stop what the Ravens got going on. All the defense got to do is just make sure they don't keep it close. That's literally, I know that's asking a lot, right? But it's still.
Well, Rita.
Not 31 points.
I don't know if this is asking too much, but pitchers and catchers will be participating in their first workout in Sarasota February 13th. So we are less than a month away. Tony Taters is out there on the street. He's got his agent telling people in the media, hey, man, I'll take a one-year deal somewhere. Like, should these guys break his fall? I mean, we saw Manaea and Eovaldi go back to their teams. It sounds like Pete Alonso might be heading back to the Mets. Should Mike Elias make this happen?
I mean, why not, right? Number one, he's the guy that can put up over 40 home runs. Mm-hmm. Number two, he's a fan favorite. I think we can all agree that this offseason for the Orioles has been underwhelming. It might be consistent to some people, but in terms of what people thought, in terms of getting an impact player, doesn't feel that way, right? So what can potentially change, like, the thoughts of the fan base and even the front office in terms of bringing in guys that you know are capable of making plays? Well, bring back a guy that you already know, bring back a guy that people already love. And that's just one thing that I'd like them to do out of many. But I mean, I don't see the point of leaving Santander out there, and you can always find an opportunity to put him back here. You can, you know, make him a DH, or he can rotate potentially in the outfield. I just think that I think veteran leadership is still a very important thing. And I know that, you know, they got a guy who we think is going to be his replacement, but I just don't see the harm in bringing a guy like Santander back. It certainly isn't a hindrance. The dude can hit home runs. But I mean, I don't understand why he's still out there to begin with, but here we are.
Rita, you and Glenn tomorrow?
No, we are not back till next week. It's the basketball game that's going to be here on 105.7 The Fan. Oh. We will be back next week, and we will be talking book club, of course.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
What basketball game? Maryland plays on Thursday.
We're playing a college game tonight.
Oh, Yeah. My bad. Well, then we will see. We will see you next week, then.
Yep, we'll see you next week, guys.
Thank you. Oh,
thanks, Rita, as always.
Bye.
Hey, coming up next with the Hot Corner, and Jason just alluded to it, Anthony Santander still on the market. Hey, Jack Flaherty still on the market. Should the Orioles look at possible short-term deals with one or both? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
One of the few guys that's been here since that first spring training, that when our kind of new group came in 2019, made an immediate impression, and he's been a hero for us. And he has one of the key figures in bringing this franchise back to relevance, playoff competitiveness, excitement, filling the ballpark. He's been terrific. I love the guy personally. I think everyone in that locker room does. But this is Major League Baseball. We've got business coming up. There's the time and the place for that, and it's not here and now.
So that hero that Mike Elias was talking about is Anthony Santander.
Saying all that, we can have Mayo for $500,000, we're good with that.
Tony Taylor's still out on the market. So is Jack Flaherty, by the way. It sounds like the agents come out and said, we'd be willing to take a short-term deal. We're not getting that 6-for-150 that Jim Bowden promised us.
I don't think there's the 65-for-3 that Teoscar Hernandez got. Yeah.
So if you're the
Orioles, you guys all along, this guy's not getting more than $20 million a year.
So I said, and remember, I was, and I'll go back to this. Like, I was of the mind that if you can go and get Teoscar Hernandez, I'd rather have him than Santander. That said, you can't just ride with Tyler O'Neill, but if you have Santander and O'Neill, now all of a sudden it's a little interesting.
I would start to take them more seriously.
Yes.
But, like, I also think there's an element to this that cannot be quantified on their abacuses and their calculators, which is like, how do agents really think of you? How does the baseball community really think of you? And players talk knowing there's a time and place to break a guy's fall. And even if in your heart of hearts you only think he's worth 16 this year, or you're worried he's going to block one of your precious prospects, who, by the way, you've only begrudgingly played in the majors yourself. That's why we don't know as much about them as we should, because you're so judicious about when you play them at this level. Like, now would be the perfect time to send a message to your locker room and to others that, hey, this kind of stuff that he was just talking about in that clip actually matters. And what is another $20 million for 1 year to them, or 18, or whatever it turns out to be? You're still looking at a middle-of-the-road payroll, and you're still looking at no financial commitments beyond this year. Like, Baseball America had a story out recently where they talked to, like, I don't know, 30 or 40 scouts. I mean, they're speaking anonymously, but, like, the Orioles in these polls fared worse than as bad as any other team, because people feel like they're not warranted. They're not wanted. You know, it's just three people looking at a computer printout screen and making all their decisions there. Like, there's things you could do that maybe fly in the face of that a little bit, that don't force you to deviate from your long-term plan, that throws a bone to your players, throws a bone to the idea that leadership matters, and throws a bone to your fans.
That's three.
Let's throw a two-bone.
Like, if that stuff matters even a little bit to you, and you've done so the bare minimum to this point, why wouldn't you know he fits? You like everything about him, except you don't want to pay him for multiple years. Now you might not have to do that either. Like, if he goes to the Blue Jays or the Red Sox on a bargain basement deal, what does that say about Mike Elias?
This move just makes way too much sense if he is resigned to the fact of signing a one-year deal or a two-year deal with an opt-out or any of that. But that's his bag. That's, like it or hate it. And we've talked a lot about how this money has been spent, but they have added a lot to the payroll.
Spent like $65 million.
Yeah, $63 million just this offseason alone. Now, how they spent it, of course, that's a completely different story, but they love doing these one-year deals.
Of all the stuff they've done, are any of them as much of a sure thing as Tony Tater's one-year $20 million?
No.
In a different respect, well, in his role, Kittredge might be, but
He's also a 35-year-old reliever.
But I hear you. And Santander,
This is Santander coming
off. Santander's going to be in the lineup every night.
Yes.
He's never batting lower than fifth or sixth. Kittredge is going to pitch three times a week in a good week.
I just said in his role that he seems to be pretty damn good. But yeah, you're right.
And Kittredge wasn't the guy they originally wanted.
No, they wanted
Hoffman failed his physical.
Yes, and he failed another physical as well with the Braves.
I mean, this guy, it's not he's coming off a down year. And we know that, look, the OPS, there's things. He's not perfect. But to me, this is what teams that actually do care about winning in the here and now, this is when they swoop in and say, yeah, our patience was rewarded. Not, we're going to be even more patient than everybody else, even though we know him better, and let somebody else pick up the potential bargain.
Doesn't make sense to me. I think this is, as Bone put it, a no-brainer. Like, now that he's sitting there saying, yeah, I'll take a short-term deal, this is when you swoop in.
Okay, so saying all that, how confident are you, scale 1 to 10, that they actually do this?
3.5.
Yeah, I'm like a 1.2.
Probably around a 3.5.
We're optimists, Bone. Yeah, we're optimistic. Any interest on Jack Flaherty on a one-year deal?
How many number three starters do you need?
Hey, three threes wins a lot of poker hands.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You get a set of three. You flop a set of threes.
What does that do with P-knuckle?
I don't know either. You flop a set of threes, you disguise that bad boy, you win a big pot.
Three threes and Uno? Don't do a whole lot unless they're all the same color or something. Well, I guess, no, three threes wouldn't be bad.
Yeah. What's P-knuckle?
It's a card game. I don't know too much about it.
Yeah.
That's not my bag.
Three threes and gin rummy. Is that like a fire under Gigi?
I haven't played gin rummy since I was a child.
I haven't played it in a million years.
Yeah.
It was a jam back in the day.
Yeah. What about war?
War is great.
Threes are tied. Now you go to war. You get three cards and the fourth one. You see. Anyway.
And why are we? We're not hearing anything about. We're not hearing them.
No.
They seem to be going out of their way not to be connected to this guy.
Well,
the same way they with Sasaki.
They are concentrating on trying to steal prospects from the teams that are trying to sign Sasaki, I think is what their bag is right now.
We'll talk about that a little later, tomorrow. they better be.
Yes.
They better
well,
be.
Well, that sort of seems to be their wheelhouse.
Go get Taters.
Yeah. Coming up next, Terps beat Minnesota last night. It wasn't pretty, but it was a conference win. They've got themselves a two-game winning streak to take on Northwestern on Thursday. The voice of Maryland basketball, Johnny Holiday, joins us next here on The Fan.